Translation. Sutta said, in the beginning of creation, the Lord first expanded himself in the universal form of the Purusha incarnation and manifested all the ingredients for the material creation. And thus, at first, there was the creation of the 16 principles of material action. This was for the purpose of creating the material universe. Purport by Hitivayan Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Bhagavad Gita states that the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, maintains these material universes by extending his plenary expansions. So this Purusha form is the confirmation of the same principle. The original personality of Godhead, Vasudev, or Lord Krishna, who is famous as the son of King Vasudev or King Nanda, is full with all opulences, all potencies, all fame, all beauty, all knowledge, and all renunciation. Part of his opulences are manifested as impersonal Brahman, and part of his opulences are manifested as Paramatma. This Purusha feature of the same personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the original Paramatma manifestation of the Lord. There are three Purusha features in the material creation, and this form, who is known as the Karanadakshaya Vishnu, is the first of the three. The others are known as the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and the Shirodakshaya Vishnu, which we shall know one after another. The innumerable universes are generated from the skin holes of Karanadakshaya Vishnu, and each one of these universes the Lord enters at Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is also mentioned that the material world is created at certain intervals and then again destroyed. This creation and destruction is done by the Supreme Will because of the conditioned souls or the Nitya Bhadda living entities. The Nitya Bhadda or the eternally conditioned souls have the sense of individuality or ahankar, which dictates them sense enjoyment, which they are unable to have constitutionally. The Lord is the only enjoyer, and all others are enjoyed. The living beings are predominantly enjoyers, but the eternal conditioned souls, forgetful of this constitutional position, have strong aspirations to enjoy. The chance to enjoy matter is given to the conditioned souls in the material world, and side by side they are given the chance to understand their real constitutional position. Those fortunate living entities who catch the truth and surrender unto the lotus feet of Vasudev after many, many births in the material world join the eternal liberated souls, and thus they are allowed to enter into the kingdom of Godhead. After this, such fortunate living entities need not come again within the occasional material world. But those who cannot catch the constitutional truths are again merged into the Mahatattva at the time of annihilation of the material creation. When the creation is again set up, this Mahatattva is again let loose. This Mahatattva contains all the ingredients of the material manifestation, including the conditioned souls. Primarily, the Mahatattva is divided into 16 parts, namely the 5 gross material elements and the 11 working instruments or senses. It is like the cloud in the sky. In the spiritual sky, the effulgence of Brahman is spread all around, and the whole system is dazzling in spiritual light. The Mahatattva is assembled in some corner of the vast, unlimited spiritual sky, and that part, and the part which is thus covered by the Mahatattva, is called the material sky. This part of the spiritual sky, called the Mahatattva, is only an insignificant portion of the whole spiritual sky. And within the Mahatattva, there are innumerable universes. All these universes are collectively produced by the Karnadaksha Vishnu, called also the Mahavishnu, who simply throws his glance to impregnate the material sky. Om Jnantimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Swapadandigam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutha Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padhan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamcha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Om Vishnu Padhaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatyadesha Tarine Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So very happy to be here with you this morning. My first time giving Srimad Bhagavatam class at Bhaktivedanta Manor. So I please request all of your blessings. I feel extremely unqualified to be sitting here with so many advanced devotees. But for my own purification, I've been asked to speak something. So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, entitled Krishna is the Source of All Incarnations, Text 1. Sutta said, in the beginning of the creation, the Lord first expanded himself in the universal form of the Purusha incarnation and manifested all the ingredients for the material creation. And thus at first there was the creation of the 16 principles of material action. This was for the purpose of creating the material universe. So Sutta Goswami is answering some of the questions that the sages had asked him. And in this particular chapter, Sutta Goswami is speaking about the different incarnations of Krishna. And he begins by talking about how the material world is created, and how the Lord expands himself in so many different ways to enter into every single atom of this world. And this is also confirmed in the Brahma Samhita. Ekopya asya rachitum jagadananda kotim yachaktirasti jagadananchayad ananta adhantista paramau chayantastanam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who is the original personality of Godhead. By his partial plenary expansion, Mahavishnu, he enters into the material nature and then into each and every universe as Garbhadaksha Vishnu, and then as Shirodaksha Vishnu, into all the elements, including every atom of matter. Such manifestations of cosmic creation are innumerable, both in the universes and in the individual atoms. So not only does Lord Sri Krishna expand himself in these different plenary expansions, but he also explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata, abhyutathanam dharmasya tadatmanam sri jamyaham, paritranaya sadunam vinashaya cha duskritam, dharma samstapanathaya sambhavami yuge yuge. That he actually descends himself for four different reasons. The first reason is to abolish irreligion, and second reason is to establish religion. The third reason is to annihilate the demons, and the fourth reason is to protect the devotees. But the acharyas, they explain that Krishna himself doesn't need to come down personally to do these things, because he can send anyone. Any of his empowered devotees can do any of these things. Or he can even do these things from his own abode, from Golok Vrindavan. But the reason Krishna comes to this material creation and performs his pastimes is so that us fallen souls become attracted to him. And simply just by hearing his pastimes, we become purified. And we become so attracted to Krishna's pastimes that we cannot even live for a moment without hearing them. Machitta matkatta prana bhodyanta parasparam kathayantascha mam nityam tushyanti cha ramanti cha. Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita says that my devotees, they are constantly remembering my pastimes again and again, but they are deriving more and more bliss from hearing these pastimes. So in this verse, Sutta Goswami is talking about the Lord expanding into the Purusha incarnation. And he's manifesting all the ingredients for creation. So 16 principles of material action are named in this verse. So those 16 principles are the five elements, which are earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And then the 11 sense organs. 5 for acquiring knowledge, which are eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and skin. And the 5 working senses, which is the voice, the legs, the hands, the anus, and the genitals. Now, it's very interesting that it's mentioned that the first created element is sound. And sound is a subtle form of ether. And when sound mixes with the mode of ignorance, that's when the material world is created. So I was listening to one lecture by Srila Prabhupada, and he was mentioning that someone is required to do the mixing. Just like in this material world when we do an experiment. And the example that Prabhupada gave was sodium bicarbonate and citric acid. I'm sure all of us have done that experiment at school, where you mix them together and it begins to bubble up. So Prabhupada said that someone is required to do the mixing. So it cannot happen by itself. And I was just actually remembering when I was hearing the example of how someone is required to do mixing. So in at university, I studied pharmacy. So as you can imagine, a lot of the labs, a lot of the workshops were about making medicines, so doing experiments. So we did this one experiment where we had to make a cream. And what happened was that we got the notes beforehand, the prep of how to make the cream, so we could read up on it. And by chance, I actually had some of that cream at home, because it was one of those creams that you can buy in the shop. And I went to the lab and I took this little pot of cream with me. And, you know, everyone was really stressed out about making this, trying to get everything right. And I was very relaxed because I knew I could just transfer this cream from one pot to another pot and they wouldn't even know. So everyone was so stressed and, you know, measuring it out. And I was there sitting very relaxed. And everyone was wondering, why is he so relaxed today? He's not worried at all. So this actually reminded me of one example that I had in a class. That when we're asked to serve prasad, say it's on a Sunday feast, sometimes we become quite apprehensive about if there's going to be enough prasad left for us. Right? When we're serving, we're always checking, oh, is there enough? Like, maybe I should give a little bit less to people. But if we make our plate before and we keep it under the table, then how much we give? We give like, no, Prabhu, take more. Even if they were like, no, it's enough, you guys need to eat. No, don't worry about us, you know, as long as you eat, we are happy. So, just like if we know the mercy is there, if we know that, if we completely rely on Krishna, and we know that Krishna has a plan for us, then why do we need to worry? So similarly, that's that cream example, that because I had that cream already made up, even though it was kind of a cheating propensity, that really I should have done it properly. But even though I knew it was there, I didn't have to worry so much. I could just relax and I could make it in my own time and I didn't have to stress out so much about it. So similarly, if we rely on Krishna's plan, if we have faith in Krishna, then we don't have to worry so much about what's happening in our life because we know that Krishna's taken charge. So it's very interesting how sound was the first created element. And just like sound created the material world, sound can get us out of the material entanglement. Transcendental sound. And we all know the transcendental mantra, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That has appeared from Golok Vrindavan. Golokeya Prema Dana Hari Nama Sankirtan. This is directly from the spiritual world. So when we chant this mantra, when we perform bhakti, then this releases us from the material entanglement. And a very, very wonderful story. There's so many stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam about how powerful bhakti is. And not only bhakti, but the core principle of bhakti, which is chanting the holy names. So one story in the Srimad Bhagavatam, at the end of the fifth canto, Maharaj Parikshit asks about what is the destination of different living entities. And Sukadev Goswami, he begins to narrate about how if someone's in the mode of goodness, they go to the heavenly planets, mode of passion, they stay in the earthly planets, and the mode of ignorance, they go down to the hellish planets. And Maharaj Parikshit began to ask, what are these hellish planets? And Sukadev Goswami began to explain 28 different hellish planets. And he gave the reason for each of the hellish planets. Why someone would go there, what sin they would perform to end up there. And when I was reading these, I was thinking that these sins, they're not such a great big deal. For example, one of the sins, if a guest comes to your house and you have some food that you don't share with them, there's a hellish planet for that. Now I know when people have come to my house and I've got some Mahaprasad that I'm really, you know, I've been wanting it to eat it for such a long time, you know, I'll give them something else, I won't give them the Maha that I want to eat. So there's a hellish planet for things like that. So many different conditions and so much suffering in these hellish planets. But a devotee is so compassionate, and Maharaj Parikshit especially is so compassionate. On hearing this, he begins to ask Sukadev Goswami, how can someone atone for these sins? Because when we do prayaschit, which is atonement, then those sins are nullified. So Sukadev Goswami initially says that we follow the Dharma Shastras, the Shastras like Manu Smriti. And Maharaj Parikshit, he begins to question this. You know, sometimes we just accept things. But Maharaj Parikshit is teaching us that we have to sometimes use our intelligence in a very submissive way. Sometimes we have to question. So he questions Sukadev Goswami that this feels like an elephant who is muddy, goes into the river, takes a bath and comes out and again rolls around in the mud. Because the heart of the person who is atoning, his heart does not change. Even though he sees criminals being put in jail, being punished, he still performs these crimes. And in the purport, in one of these purports, Srila Prabhupada mentions how about in the Christian tradition, that Monday to Friday they perform sin, and on Saturday and Sunday they do confession. And then again, after confessing these sins, they go back and perform these same sins again. And it's a repetitive cycle. So Maharaj Parikshit is asking that, you know, isn't there something else? And Sukadev Goswami says, yes, there is something else. And he says this very wonderful verse, Kechit kevale bhakta vasudeva parayana agam dunvanti kartena niharam eva bhaskaraha. Only by devotional service, kevala bhaktya, one can atone for their sins. Why? Because there is a change of consciousness. I'm sure we have all experienced that when we first came into bhakti, we may have had many activities that were not conducive to bhakti. But simply by being in the association of devotees, simply by chanting, by hearing, by reading, we've given up those activities. So Sukadev Goswami is saying that soon as one comes into the path of bhakti, the desire to perform sinful activity is given up. So that's the best way to atone. And he recites one example, one story. And this story is about a young brahmana. This young brahmana, it's explained that he had a very good character. He was learned in Shastra. He was very respectful to his elders. And one day his father, he asked him to go to the forest to get some wood for the fire, for the sacrificial yajnas. And when he went to the forest, he saw a scene. He saw a sudra with a prostitute. And his mind became disturbed. He tried to blank this out of his mind, but he just couldn't. He just kept on thinking about this lady. And he decided he had to have her under any circumstances. This is the power of Maya. Maya Devi Hiesha Guna Mai Mama Maya Durateya. Even though he was learned in Shastra, even though he had good character, he still gave up everything. He left his family, he left his wife, left his father, and he went with this prostitute. He gave up all his Brahminical qualities. And because no one accepted him as a Brahmin, he had to perform all kind of sinful activities to maintain her. And she had many demands. He began to have a family with her, performing many, many sinful activities to maintain her. One day, some sages, they were walking through the village where they resided. And they were looking for some bhoga to offer to Krishna. But they saw that the condition of these people, they are not very clean. Their cooking is not very pure. So they decided just to ask for ingredients. So they went to the house, and this brahmana was called Ajamil. So they went to the house of Ajamil, and he gladly gave them some bhoga, some raw fruit and vegetables. And they made a wonderful offering. And the sages said to him, if you have another son, please name him Narayan. So he thought, yes, I'm happy to do that. So he had another son by Krishna's arrangement. And it's explained he was very old. He was at least at the age of 80. And Prabhupada says in the purport that we can see how uncontrolled his senses were. Because at the age of 50, one should be thinking about vanaprastha. One should be thinking about going deeper into spiritual activities, thinking about renouncing family life. But we can see here, Ajamil was so much entangled that he was having a child at the age of 80 years. So he named this child Narayan. Because he was the youngest child, he was so much attracted to him. This child would talk in broken language, would sometimes walk and then fall over. And he became so much attracted to him that all the time he would search out for his child. Whenever he was eating, he would call his child, "Narayan, Narayan, come here, come and taste this." And he would give him some food from his plate. One day, he was lying down and he saw three Yamadutas coming to take him. Now, can we imagine? The Yamadutas explained that they're so scary to look at. And when he saw them, instantly he shouted out, "Narayan, Narayan!" He was calling his child. His child was just close to him. And at that moment, the Vishnu Dutas came. The Vishnu Dutas looked at the Yamadutas. And the Yamadutas looked at the Vishnu Dutas. And the Yamadutas said, "Who are you?" Because the Yamadutas are the people who take the sinful souls to Yamraj. And Yamraj gives them the punishment. So they never see each other. Because either someone is sinful or either someone is a devotional. And if they're devotional, the Vishnu Dutas come. And if they're sinful, the Yamadutas come. So it's very rare for both to end up to collect the same soul. So there's a wonderful conversation between both of them. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda ki jai, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai. There's a wonderful conversation. And there's so many lessons to be learned from this conversation. But just one verse that shows the power and the potency of the holy name. The Yamadutas said, "This person is sinful. He has committed so many sins. He deserves to go to Yamraj and be punished." The Vishnu Dutas replied, "Ayam hi krita nirvesho janma kotyam hasamapi yad vyajahara vivasho namaswastenim harihi." This person has chanted the holy names of the Lord. What to speak of this life? Janma kotyam. Kotyam means millions. He has atoned for millions of lifetimes of sin just by chanting the holy name of Narayan. But there's one quality mentioned in this verse, which I believe is the essential quality of why janma kotyam, why millions of lifetimes of sins were eradicated. And that is vivasho. He chanted in a helpless condition. Now Srila Prabhupada always mentions that we should cry out Krishna's holy names like a baby crying out for its mother. He says that, he gives another example, that we should cry out, we should pine for the holy name like someone who is in a desert for days and has not had any water. Sometimes we see in our own life when we chant, we don't chant in this condition. We chant sometimes just to get our rounds done, just to finish our 16 rounds or however many rounds we do. And sometimes what happens is that we actually become distracted while chanting. We chant and suddenly receive an urgent email or urgent message that we need to reply to. and we reply to that message. But then we find that we're on our phone and we're chanting. And the next day, you know, we're watching a film while we're chanting. Or sometimes we chanting and we're on the phone and having a full-on blown conversation and our rounds are going on. So when we chant like this, it's explained that inattentive chanting, we can chant for years and years and years and lifetimes, but we won't reach the perfection of devotional service because we need to chant like this. Now, many people, when I give this pastime, when I tell this story, they ask a question. Does that mean that in my life I can do as many sins as I want as long as at the end of my life I remember Krishna and I say Narayan? And the answer is no. Because if we look at Ajamil's life, if we study his life, we see the groundwork that was done initially about how he was a Brahmin and how he performed devotional service. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Praditya Anaya, declare it boldly, that my devotee will never perish. So Krishna, even though we may stray from the path, he sent those sages so that Ajamil came back onto the path. And what happened? When he shouted out Narayan and the Vishnu Dutas and the Yamadutas simultaneously came, Ajamil didn't go straight back to Godhead. And that is a very important point. They gave him another chance. And what did he do? He left his whole family and he went to Haridwar and he performed pure bhakti. And then after a few years, he left his body and went back to the spiritual world. So it's not that just simply by chanting Krishna at the time of death and you've committed all kinds of activities through your life that you go back home to Godhead. So we should very much endeavor to chant attentively, to chant in this mood. Srila Prabhupada mentions in this purport that we just read about Nitya Bhadda. There are some living entities who are conditioned eternally, and they are going round in this repetitive circle of creation, destruction, creation, destruction. Why? Because they want to enjoy the material nature. When we give up this desire to enjoy, but to be in the enjoyer, that's when we can get out of this repeated birth and death. And Srila Prabhupada mentions about those fortunate souls. So if we ask from a material perspective, who is fortunate? Then most people will say someone who's wealthy, someone who's good looking, someone who's famous. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he asked this question and he answered this question. Brahmande brahmite kona bhagyavana jeev. In the whole Brahmand, in the whole universe, who is the most fortunate person? Guru Krishna prasade paye bhakti lata bij. One who has attained the mercy of Guru and Krishna. And what is that mercy? That mercy is the seed of devotional service, bhakti lata bij. We sing every day, yasya prasada bhagavat prasado. That by the mercy of Krishna, we get Guru. And by the mercy of Guru, we get Krishna. So the Srimad Bhagavatam again gives so many examples of how associating with sadhus changes our whole consciousness. And one particular story told by Lord Chaitanya about how Narad Muni, he was just come back from visiting the heavenly planets. He just actually come back from Vaikuntha, and he went to Prayag, and he took bath in the river Saraswati. And as he was taking bath in the river Saraswati, and he came out of the river, he saw a deer that had been half killed. And this deer was crying out in pain. And he was thinking that who has left this deer in such a condition? So he walked further into this forest, and he saw a boar in the same condition, half killed, crying out in pain. He went further into the forest, and he saw a rabbit in the same condition. And he started to feel that, who is doing this? Who's committing such sinful activity? And as he strayed from the path, he saw a hunter there. This hunter had black complexion, his eyes were red, and he had a bow and arrow, like he was about to strike again. He looked like Yamraj, the king of death. And as Narad Muni strayed from the path and approached him, all the animals, they fled, because they saw that someone was there. This hunter, he became angry at Narad Muni. He said to him, "Why have you come here? Because of you, all these animals have fled. Do you want some deer skin?" And Narad Muni said, "No, I have one question to ask you." And he said, "What's the question?" He said, "Why are you half killing these animals?" And this hunter said that, "I've been doing this since birth. It gives me great pleasure to see these animals suffer." And this is a very materialistic point of view. You see that in this material world, there are some people that when they give pain to others, they feel happiness. This is happiness in the mode of ignorance. So Narad Muni requested that you please kindly kill these animals fully. Don't half kill them. So the hunter said, "What is the problem in half killing them?" And Narad Muni explained, "If you half kill them, if you kill them, there's some sin. There's some sin there. But if you half kill them and give them this much pain and suffering, then for life after life after life, you will have to suffer like this for as many animals that you have killed." And then the penny dropped for this hunter. And he began to think, "I have killed so many animals like this. Since my childhood, I've been trained like this." It's very interesting that the way we've been brought up, the culture, we see things through that consciousness. Isn't it so? That when we're brought up in a certain way to accept that certain rituals, certain things are right and other things are wrong, those things are embedded within us to a deep level. So this hunter, he said to Narad Muni, because he was so distraught, just thinking about the suffering that you'd have to go through. So he said to Narad Muni, "Okay, today I surrender to you. Please tell me, give me some instruction, tell me how I can get out of this suffering." And he said, "Okay, the first thing you do is you have to break your bow." And the hunter said, "How? How can I break my bow? If that is how I earn my livelihood. If I break this bow, how will I survive? How will I feed my family?" And just like when we come to bhakti, there's so many things that we have to give up. So Narad Muni said to him, "You trust me. You give this up. You break this bow. I will maintain your livelihood. I will make sure that your family get fed, and you have everything that you need. So he had faith. He had faith in Narad Muni. So he broke his bow. He said, okay, now I've broken my bow, what shall I do? And he said to him, now you build a cottage near the river. And you plant some tulsi there. And you worship this tulsi, and you chant the holy names of Krishna. So this hunter, his name was Magri, he did this. And the whole village, the whole community heard about this transformation. That this hunter who was so cruel and evil has given up his hunting and is now taking up to bhakti, to the path of bhakti. So they all came and they all used to bring food for him. So in this way he was being maintained. So one day, another sage, a friend of Narad Muni, he wanted to visit this hunter. So they both went together. And when the hunter saw from a distance Narad Muni coming, he ran outside in great enthusiasm to see his guru. And he was just about to pay obeisances, dandavat pranam, to his Guru Maharaj. But he saw some ants were there on the ground. So he got his cloth and he began to take those ants and move them out the way, very gently. And the other sage who saw this, he said, wow, what a transformation. How is this possible? That this person, who was so much into killing animals and seeing them suffer, is now not even willing to hurt a small ant. This is the power of association, sadhu sangha. And he went in, and this hunter Magri, he washed their feet, and he chanted in front of his Guru Maharaj, and he displays ecstatic symptoms. This is the power of bhakti. This is the power of the holy name, the power of sadhu sangha. So it's come up to 8:30 and my time is finished. So just to quickly summarize. So the verse was talking about how Krishna expands himself in different forms. And even though he is present within every atom of this universe, he still expands himself further and comes down, sometimes in his original form, just so that we can become attracted to him. We learn about how sound is the first created element, and how transcendental sound can actually get us out of the material entanglement. We heard about the power of bhakti and how it is the only way to atone for any sin that we may have created, and the power of the holy name when we chant in a helpless condition. And we heard about who is the most fortunate person, one who has bhakti, and how the association of a great sadhu can transform someone to become a pure devotee of the Lord. So I thank you very much for your kind attention and for all your blessings. Hare Krishna.